If you've recovered from COVID-19 or unknowingly been exposed to it, you may have antibodies that could help COVID-19 patients. Donate blood and receive testing for COVID-19 antibodies. Visit Vitalant.org today.
A different future starts with you. That's why GoDaddy does more than help you find a name. You can create, sell, and get found online, so any small business could be a driving force to create change or build an empire. We know old ideas aren't cutting it anymore, so we're calling for a new generation of thinking, your way of thinking. So whatever you have in mind that will help make a different future, find everything you need to get started at GoDaddy.com. Because the future isn't decided yet. It's up to us to make it happen. Start different at GoDaddy.com.
This is an ode to the glass noodle. You may be glass only in name, but our love for you is crystal clear in every Bibigo Korean dumpling. Your tantalizing texture tickles the taste buds. And while you are see-through, the world can't help but see you. The glass noodle, one of many obsessively crafted ingredients in every plump and juicy Korean dumpling from Bibigo. Go handcrafted. Go Bibigo. Authentic Korean dumplings now in the freezer aisle.
This is Podco Media Networks.
It's the Innovation Podcast with Mark Reed Edwards and Garnett Harriman. Let's start the show.
Hi, it's Mark, back with another episode of the iPod. Last time, Garnett and I started our conversation with Brad Barbera, founder and chief enabler of strategic innovation at Pi Innovation. Brad's a fascinating guy who launched his career as a mayonnaise engineer, which we covered last time. This time, we look at misconceptions around innovation and lots of other stuff.
You made a point earlier I want to go back to and maybe connect with some forward-looking themes. And that was about the paranoia among executives that the whole notion of disruption has caused over the last generation or generation and a half. What sort of managerial confusion is there in your thinking about innovation? What are some of the pitfalls and sort of like, you know, black holes and misconceptions around innovation?
Well, I think the biggest misconception that a lot of managers have is that all problems are basically the same, that, you know, if all I have to do is, you know, figure out how to define the problem, we'll identify some solutions, we'll come up with some criteria to evaluate, then we'll select the right solution and implement it. And that's how we solve the problem. And those types of solutions work well for what I've heard called tame or kind problems, the kind of problems that they do have a solution. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean they're easy problems. And I've seen the example of the Apollo missions. Like, that's definitely not easy to get somebody to the moon and back safely. But it was a tame problem in the sense of, you know what you're trying to do. There's one way to do it. There's kind of one criteria for success. And so you can approach that in a very structured problem-solving sort of manner. The problem with the world today is that it's, I love the term, the VUCA world, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. The problems that we face in businesses, in nonprofits, in startups, increasingly in government, is that the problems we're addressing don't have a single solution. They might have 20 different solutions, and the criteria, what might be the best solution, you can't even agree on what those criteria ought to be. So those are what people will call wicked problems, not wicked in the sense of evil, but just they're unruly, they're hard to grasp. In the managerial world, we tend to come at those wicked problems and we're just determined we're going to tame them. We're going to make it a tame problem, you know, come heck or high water. And it just doesn't work that way. You really need to take a very different approach to solving those wicked problems than you do for the tame ones. Another example of a tame problem might be building a house. You start with a blueprint, and yes, there are risks along the way. There could be supply issues. There could be weather problems. You know, it's not that there's no risk involved, but those risks are calculable. You can kind of say, well, you know, on average, you know, our houses are built in 45 days plus or minus 5, and so we can promise people 50. You know, when it comes to a wicked problem, you can't make that promise. And yet managers will come, especially they'll come to their innovation teams and they'll say, by the way, we need this new product that has to be super successful. We want it to disrupt the marketplace and you need it by, you know, November 3rd. And, well, no, you can't do that. If you really want something that's going to be world changing and it's going to require a lot of trial and error, it's going to require failure tolerance. You know, going back to the Apollo missions, there's that famous quote, you know, failure is not an option. If failure is not an option, you're dealing with a tame problem. Failure must be tolerated in the scope of wicked problems, because you just don't know until you've actually put a solution out there how well it's going to do, what the unintended consequences of it are going to be. It's too intractable to just try to perfect it. Yet managers keep coming at it as if, like, I have to tame this thing. I have to treat it like a tame problem.
I'm trying to understand the provenance of the methodology, wicked versus kind, risk versus uncertainty. Do most managers understand these concepts intuitively? Or do you feel like this is something that needs to, you know, they need training around or exposure to and practical sort of experience with? Where do these concepts come from?
Certainly a training component. The biggest thing is kind of an awareness component that there is this difference. And in project management, you'll constantly have these arguments between like the waterfall methodology versus agile. And if you are going to kind of stereotype the two, the waterfall is the traditional approach for solving a tame problem. Like, and I would describe it like a capital installation that you're doing for your company. You know, you know what equipment you need, you know how long it's going to take to procure, you know about installation, you can plan for the startup and ramp up. It's a very contained problem and you kind of have enough information going into it that you know how to solve that problem. With the wicked problems, you know, something like, you know, innovation, especially the bigger the innovation, the more breakthrough it's going to be, the more wicked the problem it has to be. If it's a tamer problem, then everybody's going to be able to solve it relatively straightforwardly. Whereas the wicked problems, like that's where those unique insights and that ability to try new things, learn from them, very lean startup methodology, that's where, you know, those types of problems can be addressed.
Interesting. So let's move on to like another topic that's going to hit closer to this one notion that keeps coming up in my world and probably in your world. What's a true insight? What's an authentic insight versus, you know, just an incremental improvement, that kind of thing? What can you do to actually keep innovation? And then I'm guessing this is for the most, you know, definitely in the corporate setting, especially. How do you keep innovation actually innovative? What can you do that's different to make innovation a reality in places like corporate settings?
I love your question about, you know, insights. And I just saw a post from an organization called LPK that was all about what are different categories for insights. And I joked with them that, in fact, their categorization of insights was insightful in itself. At least it was for me. I tend to think of an insight as being a new truth that it's kind of revealed to you and it gives you some motivation to take some new action. And the way they were categorizing things, they had this one form of insight would be something that is completely establishes a brand new truth. Another one would be something that reinforces an existing truth, kind of, you know, confirmatory insight. Another one would be to deepen the truth, like you understand it at an additional level. It's still within the same truth, but you're getting deeper. You can also broaden that sort of truth. But then there, the most interesting one that they had was the kind of insight that completely flips the truth. It takes what is your conventional wisdom, throws it on its head, and comes up with something completely new. And when they put that kind of a framework around what insights are, to me, that immediately said these different types of insights lead to different types of innovation. So like that, either the type of insight that establishes a new truth or the type of insight that flips the old truth on its head, those are the kinds of things that really just revolutionize the world. Those are the breakthrough innovation sorts of insights. And then the others are much more the incremental kind of thing, things that will make existing products and services better, but not necessarily the kind that are going to totally revolutionize things. And so I really loved that framework that they presented, and it's kind of been kicking around in my mind, you know, how can I use this better and help people understand those things better so that they can generate the right kinds of insights.
So this is getting super interesting to me, because that dichotomy between the two kinds of insights, so I'm just going to paraphrase, and you correct me if anything is not true to the original concepts, but the incremental or validating or confirming type innovation versus the, you know, invention of a new truth or the flipping of a traditional category truth or what have you, right? Those are that's the dichotomy.
Basically, if you split it into two categories and then have subcategories, that would be kind of the way to go.
COVID-19 patients need your help.
If you've fully recovered from COVID-19
or unknowingly been exposed to it,
you may have the antibodies that could help COVID-19 patients recover.
Donate blood and receive testing for COVID-19 antibodies.
Visit Vitalant.org today to schedule an appointment to donate blood.
That's Vitalant.org. Help save lives and schedule your appointment at Vitalant.org.
You could help save lives.
It feels like if you stay at that higher level in the taxonomy and it's split between these two tracks, it feels like the incremental or validating or confirming stuff is a lot easier to achieve in a corporate setting. No offense to the corporations, but versus the, you know, flipping the script and, you know, damned all the consequences, but, oh, you know, we've created something new and interesting, being a lot easier to pursue in an independent or an external type innovation setting. Would you, agree with that broadly?
I would very much agree with that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be just with corporations. I think in general, our minds are more geared towards wanting to continue to believe what we understand to be the way the world works. And it requires a tremendous amount of humility, curiosity, skepticism in a way, to be able to have the mindset to question things that are, you know, the sacred cows of an organization or of an industry. And that's why those things don't come around a whole lot, because it's hard to overcome those things. You know, if you look at, you know, Einsteinian physics versus Newtonian physics, Einstein was ridiculed at first. Like, yeah, you can't overturn Newton. What are you thinking? And yet, you know, ultimately it's seemed to bear out that's the way to go. And yet, you know, there could be somebody in the physics world right now who's overturning Einstein. I don't know. But it definitely requires somebody willing to stand up and challenge the status quo. And that's hard. That's hard to do. It's risky. It's risky from a personal standpoint, that people aren't going to like you. People are going to ridicule you. Yeah, I kind of liken it to whack-a-mole. You're the one sticking your head up, and somebody's trying to bash your head back down right away. It's it's hard. It's hard to do, and so that's why I think we tend towards those safer, more incremental, and they can be beneficial. They can really make a good impact in the world. They're just not the kind of things that totally revolutionize the way we look at how things work.
I'm with you that the category disrupting and the sort of like category creating type innovation is got to be hard. It probably takes a personal toll, a reputational toll, an intellectual toll, all sorts of stuff on you. On the other hand, there's something about it that is, I'm going to throw out a concept and it may be totally off base, but it feels like you can approach it in a somewhat formulaic way. Right? And here's what I'm getting at. So if we spend a lot of time understanding how categories behave, or how markets or market segments, or even, you know, consumer segments behave, and we can attribute a certain finite number of attributes, behavioral patterns, whatever, at least a starting point for that authentic disruption can be literally just negating or flipping. Right. I mean, it feels like there's a potentially formulaic progression towards, and then you just sort of experiment with what are the consequences of flipping this particular bullet point characteristic or behavior or whatever, you know, or the proverbial, you know, conceptual what if question, right? There's part of me that goes down the track looking at this model and keep thinking, until a very deep part of the actual progression, it may be possible to reduce it somewhat to formula, but I could be missing something.
I hesitate when I talk about reducing to formula, and I'm a absolute big believer in structuring things to guide innovation.
Maybe that's more what I meant, to be honest. And so it's a lot less about the formulaic aspect of it and more about like the structural and potentially repeatable aspects of it, right?
Yeah, that's, and I think you're onto something. The challenge is always like when you provide structure or tools, people can misuse those. And unfortunately, once the tool starts getting blamed rather than the misuse of the tool, you kind of end up throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And that's why I just hesitated on the term formulaic, because I do think there are a lot of people who tried, again, they're kind of going back to that wicked versus two problem. They're trying to say, like, you know, this is the way to solve this problem. This is the way to approach innovation. And, you know, you will not deviate from that. I like to think of things as you have a mission and you have some guardrails, and you always focus on achieving that mission in the long run. You're relentlessly focused on achieving an outcome that you may not know how to get there, but you know what the target is. And then you have these guardrails that you have to work within. And those are kind of the constraints that you have. You know, it might be budget or material things that are available to you. It might be behavioral constraints. You know, we're going to make sure you can do whatever you want as long as it's legal, or even better, so you can do it whatever you want as long as it's ethical. And there are a lot. You know, you look at Wells Fargo and Enron, and they'll say, well, you know, forget the legal part. Let's just we'll push it as long as we don't get caught.
Oh boy!
Yeah, there are people that will do that. You know, so
of course,
You have to have the guardrails. And I, by the way, I definitely advocate for keeping it at least legal and preferably ethical. So you kind of have these guardrails. And then within that, you figure out, how do I leverage the resources that I have? How do I leverage the opportunities I have? But with all of that freedom to choose, rather than, you know, having the micromanager standing over you saying, you will do this, you will do that. You know, I want something completely new and different, but you have to do it everything exactly the same way we've always done it. You know, obviously, that doesn't work. That's why you kind of maximize the freedom people have to work within those guardrails, but you establish those guardrails so things can't go too far off the track.
That does it for part two of our great chat with Brad Barbera. Next time, we talk about Brad's home base, Boise. Plus, we hash out intrapreneurs versus entrepreneurs. I bring up my favorite example of intrapreneurship. Garnett asks Brad about common startup CEO mistakes, and we take a look into the future. That's all next time. Be there.
Thanks for joining Garnett and Mark on the Innovation Podcast. Visit the innovationpodcast.co to subscribe and listen to other episodes.